The mules are in the corral. Welcome to Mule Talk, and I'm Cindy K. Roberts, your host.
And our author, TV personality, and world-renowned mule trainer, Meredith Hodges of the Lucky Three Ranch. And we are back in the studio, and of course, Meredith is at high energy today, and she is the queen of lawlessness. So I have to ask you, Meredith, has anybody ever compared you to Belle Starr?
No, I can't say that they have, but then I usually don't stick around long enough for anybody to call me names.
That's very wise. Okay.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't know if it's intentional or just my nature.
Well, that's
okay. I'm just always moving 90 miles an hour with my hair on fire.
Well, that's good. And you're a fighter. I like that.
Yeah.
Energy. Cool. All right, so we're going to talk about donkey training, and you know it very well. I can't wait to talk about this because donkeys are really cool.
They really are, and you know, they're the male parent of the mules and the female parent of the hennies. And, of course, these are very intelligent, durable, easy-keeping animals, and you get the best out of these guys. And it's been quite a journey going through all of this stuff over the last 50 years with mules and donkeys. I mean, once I discovered them, then my horses kind of went by the wayside as far as riding was concerned. They
right.
were good for breeding, but that was about it. And it was nice to have them as a comparison in the books and everything, too. And the first questions I got was when I was training mules, and people were asking me if there was a difference in training the mules from training horses. And I originally thought maybe that might be true. So when I wrote these mule crossing articles that I'm going to attach to our podcast, these were written a long time ago in 1998. And the way I trained was a little bit different from one animal to the next because people convinced me that there was a difference between training donkeys from training mules, from training horses, from training ponies. But over the years, I've discovered that when you have a complete logical, sequential training program, it's not any different going from one animal to the other. The only thing that really stuck out is that you needed to address each individual animal differently, whether they were a mule, horse, donkey, because their personalities and their dispositions were different. You can have a lazy horse and a lazy donkey, and they have the same issues with training, even though one's a horse and one's a donkey. But the logic of putting together a program with very small steps, climbing up the ladder of training, allows the animal to adjust to the level that you're asking of them, both physically and mentally. And I thought that was more important than addressing whether they were a horse, a mule, or a donkey, or a pony. It's more important to make it easy for the individuals to learn. And granted, training your donkey isn't really much different than training horses and mules, although there are differences in instinct and attitude that will determine your approach in each of the given situations at any given level. But the mechanics and the techniques remain the same. So you just have to adjust yourself. And even with donkeys, you will see differences, for instance, and horses and mules and ponies, in the way that they behave in their pecking orders. Now, horses are very drastic and reactive in their pecking order and determining who's going to be dominant and who isn't. Ponies are the worst. They've all got a Napoleon complex, and they just they go ballistic when they're determining who's the big man on campus.
Right,
you know,
right.
Big horses are a little bit more subtle about it, and draft animals are even more subtle about it.
Yeah.
The mules, they're pretty more into threatening than they are actually getting into kicking and biting, and they only do that when the other animal gets too close. But if you go ahead and use some of the techniques that I have outlined for mules and hennies, then like spacing their food dishes and their piles of hay 16 feet apart, that can usually dispense all the fighting that goes on with the pecking order. But with donkeys, it's very different. You can put horses and mules out in a pasture and they will intermingle, for instance, in herds according to who they prefer personality-wise. Okay. And generally speaking, the mules like to hang out with the horses, and especially the female horses. The male mules want to be big man on campus, so they will fight with the other male animals to be the dominant animal in the herd, where the mollies will blend more and more easily. Donkeys, on the other hand, don't want anything to do with all of those radical, reactive animals. Mm-hmm. So if they're in a pasture with horses and mules, you will see the donkeys will go off by themselves in their own little family herd. And even within the family herd of donkeys, they have their own rules. It's a matriarchal society. And the mother will not run off and wean her offspring from the year before if you leave them together. She will slowly get them off the teats as she gets a new foal, and won't be as tolerant of them suckling as she was when she didn't have the foal. But everything happens kind of gradually, and the younger animals that are growing up are allowed to stay with the herd without pecking order fighting. There might be a flip of the head or something when they're getting fed, and mom's just saying, no, you go over here. No, you go over here. No, this one goes here. And she's much harder on the little boy than she is on the little girls. Mm. And as long as the little jack foals behave themselves, they are allowed to hang in the family. If they start getting dominant, however, she will run them off from the family herd, and they won't get the privilege of hanging out with them. And a lot of them will become subservient just so they can hang out with the herd. Now, when the genets are foaling, I do not recommend leaving jack foals in with the genets. It's okay to leave the female foals with the genets when they're foaling, because that's what they do naturally. They like it when their whole family is together, and it lowers the level of anxiety and tension, and the pregnancy goes better when you do that. The other thing you need to keep in mind, too, with genets that are going to foal is just because you've done all your training on them and imprinting and all of that, that they are going to be the same way with the foal once they have the foal, that isn't necessarily true. All of a sudden, you are their worst enemy, and they will run you off, and they will take you to the ground defending that foal if you're not careful.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I recommend doing right from the very beginning is teaching the genet that she's to stand still and allow you to handle that foal so you can do the imprinting. And in order to do that, you are going to have to put the halter on the genet, tie her up right next to her hay rack or whatever, or to a pile of hay, doesn't matter what, but you gotta tie her up so she doesn't come after you. And then allow her to go ahead and eat while you handle the foal. And then the imprinting should go just like we described with mule foals, horse foals, pony foals, etc. And you teach them to be handled. You put your fingers all over their faces and stroke their eyes above and below. Stroke their ears, stroke their nostrils. Put your finger in the nostril and run it around, but don't be invasive about it. Keep it a nice, light, comfortable touch, but not a tickle, so that they can learn to enjoy this. And then when you're all done imprinting the foal, then you, that's their first lesson, then you can go ahead and take the halter off the female and let them go, and then you just make sure that you're right next to the gate, because she might change your mind and go after you the minute you take the halter off. So you kind of have to be looking over your shoulder with donkeys, because they are very protective of their foals, they're protective of their family, and they know you're a human being, and they're not easily fooled into thinking you're part of the family, because they know that you're not.
Okay.
You know, now a mule, on the other hand, and he's even different from a horse. A horse will let you go ahead and imprint the foal, and they might even walk off. A mule that's older in a pen with younger animals, if you're imprinting them, may get jealous, and they might consider you their person and be jealous of you imprinting anyone else, and they may wrap their body completely around you to prevent you from touching the other animal. So it's prudent to do this imprinting only with the animal that you're doing it with. Separate them. Don't try to do it in a herd. It doesn't work very well in a herd, because these guys are intelligent beings, and like intelligent human beings, they have all of those little characteristics that humans have that get them in trouble. So in order to keep that from happening, it's best to keep yourself in a confined space, keep the animals only that you're going to be working with in the confined space, and restrict them and control them as needed. So it's really important that you do this imprinting with the foal. And you don't have to do it every day, but every other day when they're young like that is advisable, just to reintroduce yourself to the genet and to reintroduce yourself to the foal in the beginning. And when you're imprinting the foal, think of the kind of attitude you want to cultivate in him. Don't come at him with the idea that he must accept you. This is a forceful and intrusive attitude and can foster resistance. Come at him with love, patience, and kindness, and these are the things he will learn. Give him the respect and ask that he respect you. And he'll begin to learn about behavioral limitations and boundaries. If he were in a herd, the adults would demand that he respect their space with well-placed discipline. And that's what you have to do with them as well. Take your example from the way that the adults in the family act towards each other. Get used to kind of assessing the behaviors and watching them closely. You need to learn to do these things without overdoing them. If he bites, a well-placed slap on the side of the mouth for biting and on the rump for kicking and a loud no will do the trick. Rewarding good behaviors, when he starts eating, you can start using the oats, because he will have been eating oats with his parent, with his mother. So you'll be able to tell then that he's going to like the oats too and he's ready to eat them. But until he is, you got to do the scratches and the nice stroking under the eyes. Stroking under the eyes is what the genet does to calm her foal. Oh. And horses actually do that too. So that's a good thing to remember. Mules like their ears stroked lightly. Donkeys, not so much sometimes. Donkeys will kind of yank their head away from you if you're not polite and considerate about touching their ears. The foal will be more tolerant than the older animal, so it's really advisable when you're doing your imprinting, start with the pleasurable thing and start stroking the insides of the ears in a way that is pleasurable to them. You have to watch your pressure. You have to watch how deep you go into the ears, and you want to stroke towards the tip of the ear and not down towards the deep end of the ear, because that's the way the hair grows inside the ear. And you don't want to stroke against the way that the hair goes. You want to go with it. So understanding him like this will foster understanding between you and your donkey. This is just the beginning of a long-lasting bond of friendship. Now, friendships would not be complete without a good balance of work and play. teachers who make learning fun for children make it easy for the kids to learn what they need to, as well as encouraging a good attitude towards life in general that will carry the child or the foal through the most trying of situations. Donkeys are no different than a child that way. If learning is fun and non-threatening, he will enjoy his time with you, and you'll discover his innate desire to please and to serve. The best teachers are those who realize that they too can learn from the child in this process. Each individual is different in his or her own way, and it's important to recognize the differences in order to foster confidence and self-assurance. Your donkey will appreciate that you do not only wish to teach him, but to learn from him as well. This will encourage his enthusiasm for learning and will ensure that he learns well and with confidence. He will learn right from the beginning to want to follow you anywhere because it's the best place to be. Now, when you're teaching him to follow you, you don't have to do it with a halter on necessarily. In fact, donkeys like to play tag just like mules do. So you can tag and run away from him, run a few steps away, and encourage him to come to you. And then when he does, if he's eating oats, you can offer the oats. If he's not, then you can scratch him where he likes to be scratched the best. And watching him closely will let you know where that is. And on each individual, each place that's the most pleasurable is going to be different. So you really got to pay attention. Don't get in a hurry with your donkey. As a rule, horses have really quick response times, but they have minimal comprehension and memory retention. A mule's response time is slightly slower than that of a horse, but their comprehension and memory retention is very keen. And that comes from the donkey. The donkey's response time is measurably slower. They appear to be in thought for what seems like an eternity to you and me. But their comprehension and memory retention is the keenest of all three. When training each of these different equines, you need to learn to gauge your body language and expectations accordingly. And you need to go about things in a logical and sequential way that does not even start to overwhelm them. That means you have to get these steps really small in training. You might think, for instance, if he's not leading really well, this is why you go ahead and spend some time in the confined pen tying him up to a stout post and letting him be there for a minute or two before you give tugs on the lead rope to ask him to follow. You'll have about 3 feet of slack on that lead rope and you'll be there so he won't get tangled up in it. But you just give a couple tugs on that lead rope to see if he's even going to attempt to follow you. And if you feel that tension that he's setting back on it, then you just go ahead and stand there, take a couple steps back and talk to him and say, well, you know, it's going to be more fun if you follow me. We can go more places and do more things, you know, and he's going to either set back or he's going to do whatever. And so when you're at this tying stage is what I call it, you know, don't insist that he follow you on the first time out. You got him in a confined area because when you go to take the halter off, he's going to sit back on it. And you're not going to wait for him to loosen that rope before you take that halter off and leave for the day. You just say, okay, you were really nice. You let me tie you up, and that's good. And so you go ahead and give him his oats, and while he's chewing the oats, take the halter off. Because then he's distracted and he won't set back on the halter. You don't want to reward him setting back on the halter. That's what I'm talking about, one of those tiny, tiny steps that seems like it's meaningless, but it does a humongous amount. When you go to take that halter off the next time, he's going to look for his oats first and he's not going to set back because you didn't reward him for setting back. You rewarded him first. So if you give him the oats first before you take the halter off, then he'll learn not to sit back on that halter. That's just one of those tiny little steps. The other thing is when he's tied up and he takes that first step forward towards you and loosens that lead rope from tying, then you want to give him a reward right then and take the halter off and call it the end of the lesson. Don't do it 10, 20 times to make it perfect. Drilling is not a good thing to do, especially with donkeys. It's bad enough with mules.
Right.
And it's bad with horses, too.
Yeah.
You know, this is why I break my program down into these tiny little steps so that you have a chance to succeed at something before you call it good. Now, what I've seen people do is they go and set a goal, okay, you're going to follow me this many steps before they even do the tying thing. And, of course, the animals balk. They pull the lead rope out of your hands and all of that. So any reward they're getting is rewarding that behavior. And you don't want to do that. So just break it down into tiny little steps that you can reward. And you set the stage from the tying thing, you know, to giving him the oats. Because when he gets the oats, he'll loosen that lead rope enough so you can grab that strap on the halter and undo it. And that is going to happen over and over and over again in your training. So you want to make sure that he will always give you the loose lead rope. And then when you do the lessons and you reward him for stepping forward towards you to loosen that lead rope, then that's the beginning of following you. And so when he habitually does that, when you walk up to him, then you can say to yourself, self, it might be time to untie him and see if he'll do it when he's not tied up. And so you go ahead and untie him after he's been rewarded for loosening the rope. And then you stand there with the rope, and you give a little tug, and then if he comes to you, give him the oats right then and there, and then take the halter off and leave. And save leading any number of steps for the next time. And then gauge it going forward with the number of steps he takes with you, following you each time. If he stepped one step forward the first time, rewarded, call it the end of the lesson. And don't expect any more than two or three steps if he offers. If he doesn't offer, it's only two steps. If he does, it can be three. But don't let him overdo it either, because if you think, oh, he's doing really good and he wants to go more than three steps, the next thing you're going to feel is him tugging on the rope and then going right past you. He has to learn to only come to you and then stop. He needs to learn to lead easily. This is a real tricky point with donkeys, and especially when you're teaching them to trot on the lead rope. More people have no trouble getting them to walk along with them, but when they ask them to trot, they set back on that lead rope, and you can pull and pull and pull, and they won't come. And one of the things that I do add is when you get to that stage where you're going to go from walking to trotting, and if they're backing on the lead rope that much, then you got to get another person there with a bucket full of oats in front of you, because they need the incentive to move faster, because these guys are energy conservers,
and the
donkey most of all.
Mm.
And if they don't see any point in going any faster from point A to point B, then you got to realize that.
Yeah.
And you got to make them think that, well, we got to get together on this because we're going to have a lot of this to deal with, not only on the straight line or in the hourglass pattern, but when we get to doing all these other things, you're going to have to trot when we get in a round pen too. So let's just learn to do that willingly. When you learn to move willingly, in the beginning, when you're doing this leading training with your foal until they're 2 years old, you don't need to have the elbow pull on them, because the main thing you should be concentrating on is he following me easily? you don't even have to necessarily get into your leading position where you're holding the lead rope in the left hand and pointing in the direction of travel with your right hand and then matching the steps of the front feet right away. It's just going to be enough that he follows you easily on the lead rope. I would still hold the lead rope in the left hand, but instead of putting that arm out in front of his face, which would only cause a negative backwards reaction, you might want to just stroke his neck while you're walking and keep it out of his peripheral vision, if it were, so that he just learns to walk. But like I said, you only take a couple steps, and then you go, and whoa. And if you're in the hourglass pattern, wherever he stops is where you're going to square up. Now, with the horses, mules, and ponies, it's between the corner cones and the middle cones. But with a donkey, it can be anywhere. It can be anywhere he decides to stop. And if he decides to stop, then you have to make it his idea by going, oh, good, square up now, this is perfect, and go ahead and square him up wherever he is and give him some oats. And then stand there for a few minutes. He's going to like that because they like to stand for hours if they're allowed to do that.
Right.
You know, so, you know, you kind of got to get this mindset that whatever he does is fine, but don't go beyond the steps that you can control and make it his idea where those stopping points are going to be. And keep trying to make it to the designated stopping points in your lessons, but don't push it any further than he wants to go on any given day. There's always another day. Now, in my donkey training book, I thought I had Bonnie Shields do a really funny cartoon where the donkey is sitting there thinking over his lessons, and as he's thinking, he starts out in the morning when the sun comes up, but he doesn't figure out what he's going to do until the sun goes down. So you kind of have to think of things in those terms with donkeys. And if you get in a hurry with anything, you got to realize that anything that comes out of that getting in a hurry is going to become a habit. And it may be a habit you don't want.
Right.
So slow down. Take it easy. Yes, donkeys are very easy to train. You can basically just jump on their back and go. And they kind of motivate you into trying to do that. But you're being manipulated if you think that that's what's going to happen and that all you got to do is get up there on their back and start steering them and kicking them to make them go where you want, because they're stronger than you are. And when they're tired of you, they'll just get rid of you. They'll go ahead and buck.
Yeah.
And they're really good at getting that hind end right under your seat and then just launching you. So they have their ways, I can say. But what we want to do is divert their attention to, it's more fun to play with me than it is to get rid of me. And you do that by keeping your lessons structured and trying to establish boundaries, but don't try to do them all in one lesson. Realize that you have lots of lessons that you can use doing these small steps to get to the same place. So you will go through a lot of training in the hourglass pattern without the elbow pull on, with just their halters on, and it will probably take 6 months to get through that to where they're actually stopping, following you really well. You've been able to drop into your actual leading position that's correct and stopping in the right places, squaring them up and everything. Now, with mules and horses, you can accomplish that in 3 to 6 months. But I would not say that same thing with the donkeys. The donkeys, they need that 6 months to get totally comfortable with yielding to what you're asking. So you go ahead and do that. And only after they're doing their hourglass pattern correctly is it time to move on to your obstacles like logs, bridge, tires, and other such things. And the donkey will be reluctant to pick up his feet and put them on any foreign object. So again, you've got to break down all that obstacle stuff into little tiny steps. Again, if it's the tire, the tractor tire, it seems simple enough to lead through the middle of a tractor tire, but donkeys don't see much point in going around it, and neither do mules in the beginning either.
Right.
So they'll want to go around it because they're intelligent animals, again, and they don't see any point in going through something dangerous if you can go around it. And that's just logical. And so you kind of got to agree with that. But you just show it to them and say, well, I just want to try something a little different. And with a tractor tire, you might even have to pick up his foot and put it in the middle and give him some oats for just doing that. And then after you've done that a few lessons, the next time you might get both feet in the middle. And all of the obstacles are going to be like that. They don't like, for instance, even if the bridge or the logs are straightforward, it just seems logical enough to you to step through those things in a straight line. A donkey will not do that. A donkey will step into a space, then go sideways. Then pick up the other leg and go sideways the other way. If you insist on going through something like poles over a bridge, with each step they take, they're going to go sideways and they're going to go back and forth and pulling back and everything, unless you let them take one step and reward.
Wow!
Then the next leg, another step, and reward. And you're going to have to fight this for quite some time. You've had to fight it in the hourglass pattern anyway, just to get them to walk a straight line instead of, you know, oh, I'm going over here, oh, I'm going over there. Just to be able to put yourself in position and walk in sync with their front legs the way that you're supposed to do. When you're moving into your correct position over obstacles, you might even have to go ahead and put the lead rope into the left hand, if it's the poles, for instance. And in the articles that are going to accompany this, you'll see a picture of this. This donkey that's coming through these poles, for instance, has already learned to keep his head at my hip and allow me to walk with his front legs. But now we got another thing involved, and that's the poles on the ground. And that's a total distraction, and he's not likely to remember that he's supposed to be following me on a loose rope when he's looking down at the poles.
Right.
So what I get him to do to follow me and still maintain his attentiveness is to put the oats in my hand and put them right in front of his nose with the hand that I would use to point in the direction of travel. And that will help him to concentrate on what he's supposed to be doing that way. And then when that's going well and all of that, then you can go ahead and introduce him to the round pen by walking him around as another leading training exercise. Now, by the time our mules and horses are done with the hourglass pattern and the obstacles, they're ready to be lunged. But donkeys do things a little differently than horses and mules. So you have to approach it differently. And you'll go to the round pen with your donkey for leading training lessons to introduce them to the elbow pull and to do some more things to, it would be pre-lunging training. And so leading will take on a whole new meaning with a donkey than it will with a mule or a horse, because you can let the mule and horse loose in the round pen and you can bring in turns on the forehand, turns on the haunches, stopping, backing, and all of those things. But the donkey needs it broken down first. And the first thing you're going to do is you're just going to lead him with the halter. You're not going to introduce the elbow pull yet. You're going to go around the perimeter of the round pen and teach him that this thing goes in a circle. See? This is an ongoing fence that goes in a circle. And when we go all the way around, then we can stop And then we can square up again, and they've already learned squared up in the hourglass pattern, so you're repeating things that he already knows. And just introduce it simply that way by walking the perimeter. And then you go in the middle of the round pen, and you'll teach him the turns on the forehand and the turns on the haunches. The turns on the forehand are fairly simple, because all you have to do is stand at his shoulder and poke him in the flanks, and he will be pretty okay with moving his haunches over that way. You keep your lead rope very short, and you hold that with your right hand if you're going to turn the haunches and have them track to the left, and then he will step under and move his haunches over. Don't ask for more than one step in the beginning. As soon as he's taken that one step, you stop and go to his face and feed his face. Let him chew it up. Then do it again and see if he'll take two steps. If he won't take two steps and he locks up on you, then just have him take the one step. Start over again. Lead him around a little bit around the perimeter. Come back. Take the one step, turn on the forehand, and then feed him and end the lesson there. You want to repeat what he already knows and then repeat what he was willing to give. You can always do the two steps the next lesson. Now, when you do the turn on the haunches, it gets a little more difficult. They kind of lock up with the front feet when you try to have them pivot over that hind foot. You don't want to push your whole hand into them, but if you use your index finger and poke them in the shoulder, they might move over. They might not move over. If they don't move over, then you got to jab it a couple of times. If they don't move over, then you got to take both your hands and shove that shoulder over one step. And if they take the one step when you shove them, oh, good boy.
Right.
Feed him his oats.
Yeah.
Even though you had to force it, feed him his oats.
Mm-hmm.
And then end the lesson there. Now, he'll have all the way from sunrise to sunset, the day in between the lessons, to think about what you just did. That's why I did that cartoon the way I did, because that's that thought process that they need in between lessons to really process what the heck were you doing to them and figure out, well, if she really wants me to do this, how hard would it be for me to just do it? So you think in those terms, and then you go back to the next lesson and you ask him again. Are you going to take one step over in this turn on the haunches? Are you going to give me two? If he gives you two and he won't give you three, then walk it out to the perimeter, do the one step over, then ask for the two steps again. If he gives you two, stop the lesson, quit. They leave a day in between, come back later, and see how much he'll give you the next time. Don't let him overdo it, because what the donkey will do, if you ask for four steps and he wants to give you five or six, he's going to give you five or six, and then he's going to run off and jerk that lead rope right out of your hand.
Yeah.
You only do as many steps as you can control. And don't assume that just because they were there the day before, they'll remember that it was all right. Begin each new lesson with a brief walk around the schooling area. After all, things do have a way of changing from day to day, even if it's as slight as a new plant or a stick or anything that wasn't there before. You may not remember things in such minute detail, but donkeys definitely do. And this is one way you can minimize distraction and resistance during the actual training process. And after they're doing this really well, then you can go ahead and introduce them to the bridle and the surcingle or saddle and the elbow pull. And then you just review everything again the same way. And he'll learn to move away from the pressure this way and everything. Now, you also have to remember that donkeys are amazing crowders. They like to get as close to you as possible. And if you're not careful, they will crowd you right between them and a fence and get you trapped. And that's just taking control from their point of view.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it's a defense tactic that they have. Horses and mules have the initial natural instinct to flee when they think they're in danger. Donkeys do the exact opposite, and they freeze. And if the donkey is attacked, he will move his body into the predator in hopes of knocking him to the ground, where he can then use his hooves and teeth for defense. So it's important that you teach him right from the beginning that you are not a predator and he must not move into you. If he does knock you down, it could be very dangerous, especially if he's a jack. So go ahead and do your lessons in these very small steps. And then after he's learned these really well and he walks really well and goes around the circle in the round pen really well, then you can start introducing him to the whip and what that means. And so what you want to do is you will now use the whip to touch his side to do the turn on the forehand, and you will use the crop on his shoulder to do the turn on the haunches. And when he's walking around the perimeter of the round pen, you will use the whip and just drag it on the ground behind him. You don't want to be too far away from him, because if you get in the middle, you've lost control. He has to learn that his job is to walk around the round pen and that it does have purpose. And the purpose is, now he's been walking with you at his shoulder around the round pen, now you're going to be kind of towards his hindquarters and with this whip dragging behind his back feet. And this is in preparation for ground driving. It's going to be making more sense to him later when you get the lines on him. But for now, he just needs to get used to that whip. If he stops, just tell him to walk on and strike the whip on the ground or swivel it on the ground and make some noise. And if he's sensitive, he will go ahead and scoot forward, and you go, good boy. And as soon as he's done that, then he'll stop again. And as soon as he does, then you go to his head and reward him and go, that's what I wanted. I wanted you to move, you know. And so then he knows that if you swivel that whip behind him like that, make a lot of noise, you want him to go forward. Now, there are those donkeys that will just tell you, I don't care what you're going to do, I'm not moving. And you can make all the noise you want behind them. And one of the noises that I do, too, is to strike the fence behind them off to the side. Because then it comes from the other side, you see. Mm-hmm. And they can't see what it was.
Yeah.
And it might make them move. Where on the ground they can see almost all the way around themselves, so they can see that whip's on the ground. They can tell that it's the whip, and now you're just sliding it around the ground, and they're just going, you think I'm going to be afraid of that? You know, and then you go, well, are you afraid of this? And you put it on the other side, and then they might scoot again. Then you can go up to the front and go, oh, good boy, that's what I wanted you to do. I wanted you to move. If he's a real cranky, ornery little guy, man, that's really smart, he might not move after you do that either, so you might actually have to strike him above the hocks in the gaskin where it will hurt. There's a tendon there. Now, with the mules and horses, you can strike them at the fetlock where it doesn't sting. But on a donkey, if you've gotten that far with them and they're not moving, you need to make an impression. Don't hit them more than once. Just sting it, you know, crack your whip there, and then wait for them to move. And then you can raise both your arms in unison and tell him to walk on. And if he doesn't move on, then just repeat the same thing. Sting him with the whip, raise your arms up and down, and wait for him to move. So, and be sure that you're giving him that verbal command to walk on, too. So he's getting used to the verbal command, and so he will know that if you give the verbal command and he doesn't move, the next thing he's going to feel is a sting on his butt, you know, or down right above the hocks there where that tendon is. And you also have to watch your own body position with these guys, because if you get too close, they'll stop. They'll tuck their tail and they'll stop. And what you're after is for the tail to remain relaxed and them to just move out. And they, when you're first starting this stuff, it's going to be kind of bulky go, bulky go, bulky go. And until he learns that, yeah, you want him to just keep walking. And it might take a long time going in the same direction just to take him, to get him to go all the way around the round pen and then stop. And then you got to teach the reverse too, which is nothing more than a turn on the haunches. So you'll have to step in front of him, tap him on the shoulder, and make him turn around. But when you do, be advised that this is a brand new direction.
Yes.
And you will have to do the same series of stop and go and stop and go and stop and go. Now it's just going the other way.
Yeah.
Now, halt is not usually a problem with donkeys. Getting them halted, squared up at the halt might be a little bit of a problem. But halt, not so much. And they usually get that turn on the haunches pretty quickly too, turning into the fence like that. And then when you want them to, just as some variation and to reinforce the turn on the forehand, you can step into their head while they're by the fence and get between them and the fence with your whip and tap their hindquarters over and make them do a turn on the forehand with their face to the fence. They know you've got the whip, and just be advised, they might try to crowd you. But if you have to sting them on the side with that whip, if they start coming your direction, you just immediately say no, and then just go move over. Keep it simple. Two words. That's all you need. You just keep reviewing all the steps that you're doing. Be aware of his space. Don't rush him. Or he might do turns improperly. You don't want him to do that either. You want him to keep his good posture. You want him to bend through his rib cage. You want the turn on the haunches. You want to keep those feet planted while those front feet cross over until he's on the pivot foot. It not just swap ends in the back, and he'll start swapping ends if you're going too fast. So you just got to kind of really pay attention to how he's moving. And by turning back the opposite way that he's traveling, you're establishing a new direction of travel, as well as giving him time to see that there will be a change in his movement. And most donkeys learn this pretty quickly.
Okay.
So since you've worked only in his halter, now you got the bridle on and everything, you shouldn't have any problem with these things, because now he's in good posture. So it's going to be a little different moving than when he was just in the halter and allowed to move in his habitual, out of good posture way of moving. So just realize that this is going to be a little difficult for him, and he's going to need time to think about, why are you tying me up and asking me to do something that I already did when you asked me in my halter? You know, he's got a lot to think about here. And a lot of donkeys will see exceptions to all of these commands if they don't see a purpose to it. Once he feels better in his good posture, he will start to see the purpose of why you put the elbow pull on him and are reviewing all these things. Because it's actually going to make him feel better, so he's going to eventually want to go along with you. But you're going to have to take these small steps to get there. So don't get in a hurry. What can I say? Just don't get in a hurry. He will be better at each new session, and he will offer more with each new session. And when you're teaching him to go around the round pen and just walking as if he were going to be lunged, you do have to stay kind of behind him, and you do want to prep him so that when you do put the drive lines on him, he doesn't just trot off because you're behind him. He has to get comfortable with you being behind him too.
Sure.
So you need to do that, but then eventually you're going to want to ask him to trot, and so you will do that in the lead rope and the halter first, and then you will do it again when he's in the elbow pull and his tack and equipment. And then after that is when you introduce the drive lines, where you have a little bit more control and you're going to put rain cues to everything that he's learned. So you will go ahead and drive him along the perimeter of the round pen, and he will go nicely, hopefully, or he will go stop and go, stop and go. What are these things hanging on both sides? Good thing to do at this point is to introduce one lunge line at a time. You're going to ground drive with two. But just like we do with a mule, if you plan to lunge your donkey in the open, he has to learn the cue for staying on the circle on the lunge line. So you put that line on, you let it drag on the ground as you're encouraging him forward. You can't get as close to the middle with a donkey as you can with a mule in the beginning, but you still want to get far enough away to drag that lunge line on the ground and then have him start circling. And he's going to be along the fence. So what you want to do is let him walk along the fence, and then as the outside leg comes forward, just squeeze your fist, close your fist, and as it hits the ground, let it loose again. So he's feeling the cue of staying on that gradual circle. And when he feels like he might come away from that fence for you, then you can go ahead and squeeze the lunge line and put him on a smaller circle than the round pen's on and ask him to walk around you. And every time that leg comes up, then squeeze your hand. And if he comes onto the circle, that's fine. And let him pick the size of the circle. But when he starts to complete it, he's going to run into the fence eventually. He will go around in his circle, and he will eventually complete the circle and go back onto the fence of the round pen. And that's a good way to teach him how to do a small circle. And if it's at the walk, it's fine. No problem. And then you've interjected the cue and taught him the cue for lunging on one line. And then you just put two lines on him and then do his exercises at the walk along the fence, along the round pen fence. So that kind of helps you stay on course. And then go ahead, and as he's walking along, make sure that your legs are following his back legs, because now you're going to be walking directly behind him. But you're not going to start there. You're going to start right where you've been with the whip tapping behind him and everything. But now you're going to just gradually, as he's walking around the round pen, ease your way in behind him, only as he tolerates. If he starts to scoot forward a little faster, back off. Just go back to where you were until he's calm, and then try again, and just take as long as it takes to work your way in behind him. Remember, it can take from sunup to sundown for him to learn to accept things.
Oh, yeah.
So this is what you got to do. And then when you finally do get in behind him, you make sure that now your legs are following his back legs instead of his front legs. And this will allow your hands to follow your steps. So as your steps go forward, right leg goes forward, right hand goes forward, left leg goes forward, left hand goes forward. And you learn to let him have the slack in the rein as he goes forward. A lot of people, they start to go forward and the animal scoots and then they start pulling on the reins to stop them. We don't want to do that. We want to teach him that the rein will follow him and not punish him. So if he scoots, it means you need to go back to the side. Not that you need to pull on the reins, but you need to go back to the side of him a little bit longer and get him used to you being in that kind of behind him position. But you still follow his legs with your legs, and you still follow his bit with your hands and let it go forward with slack. And eventually he'll figure out what you're doing, that you're just following along and that you aren't trying to control him with the bit. You're just going along and communicating with him through the bit. And communicating means, I'm here behind you, I'm walking with you. And that's all the further it goes. Doesn't go any further than that. It's not control. You will never be able to control a donkey. They are so much stronger than you are.
Yeah.
You're going to lose that fight.
Yeah.
And then once he's really relaxed in all of this, then you can go back to the very beginning again. And we're going to go ahead and leave him in the elbow pull this time, and we're going to ask him to walk around the round pen. And by doing all of these exercises that you've done with him, walking, turning, and putting the rein cues to the reverse, and then eventually, and you'll have your whip in your hand so you can tap his hindquarters over and do turn on the forehand and all of that. You review all of that before you ask him to go back to the perimeter of the round pen and just simply go from walk to trot. And then you're back at the beginning again. You're back to walk, 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 and trot. Swivel the dirt on, stir up the dirt behind him. Slap the whip on the ground. Snap it on the fence. And if he scoots forward one step at a trot, just wait till he stops. Go in front of him and reward him and go, "That's what I wanted." Then you have to go all the way through, walk, 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 trot, and the whole sequence all again, just like you did with a walk, because he has to think about it.
Yeah.
He has to think about whether he even wants to do it.
Right.
So you got to give him time to think about it. Now, what you don't realize is happening when you're doing all this, and maybe it will help you think about spending all this time doing these little tiny steps, is that what's happening is his core strength is being developed symmetrically around his skeleton. So you're actually doing a lot of good. It's not like people think where you go lunge him around the round pen at walk, trot, canter, build up all that bulk muscle and everything. They need good, symmetrical, in good posture, core strength at the core, at what holds up the skeleton to make them really, really strong and able to do these things that you're asking them to do. What you're doing here is building up that core strength in good posture so that when you go to get on, they will be able to stand on their own, hold their own body carriage with great strength while you mount, and you won't be able to pull them over sideways, so they won't feel threatened. So you're prepping for mounting, and you're just doing it very slowly so that all these core elements, and it's not just muscle, it's the tendons, the ligaments, it's the cartilage where in the joints is done evenly and symmetrically through their all of their bones. So that the way that they move is totally symmetrical, in good posture, and their movement is completely and totally balanced. Because I have found that the thing that disturbs equines more than anything is when they lose their balance and they feel vulnerable.
Right. Yeah.
So it's really important to take the time to do all these steps.
Well, this is all good, Meredith. I can't wait to hear part two. So you enjoy the rest of your day.
You do the same.
Okay, we will talk soon.
Sounds perfect.
Meredith's website is lucky3ranch.com, and you can call her at 1-800-816-7566. And I can be reached through my website, everycowgirlsdream.com.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl's Dream production.